Hi, it's Mark Bittman, and welcome to Food. Today's episode features an interview with a special guest and also features Kate Bittman as co-host. As always, you can reach us at food@markbittman.com, and we'd love to hear from you with questions, answers, suggestions, whatever you like. Please subscribe to the podcast and comment or rate us wherever you get your podcasts. And remember our near-daily newsletter, The Bittman Project, which you can subscribe to at markbittman.com or bittmanproject.com. Thanks for listening. Here we go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I recently joined the Culinary Council of the excellent, wonderful God's Love We Deliver, a nonprofit organization in New York City that delivers high-quality, medically tailored meals to those struggling with illnesses, free of charge, regardless of income. God's Love started during the AIDS crisis in the 80s and 90s and has done nothing but grown and done good work ever since. So I'm proud to be supporting them. I'm really happy to be supporting them. I'm joining a group of terrific people, many of whom I know, and some of whom we'll have on the podcast in the not-too-distant future. But they include today's guest, who's actor Kyle MacLachlan. Everyone knows Kyle, but he's perhaps best known for being what you might call a muse, what he sometimes calls a muse, to the eclectic genius director David Lynch. He had starring roles in the original Dune, Blue Velvet, of course, and Twin Peaks, which firmly established him as acting royalty. But he's also known for Sex and the City, Portlandia, Desperate Housewives, and played the voice of Riley's dad in Inside Out. So technically, even my six-year-old grandson knows who he is. Kyle is also an extremely good guy, generous with his time, thoughtful. And we talked, of course, about David Lynch, but also about Kyle's winery, which is called Pursued by Bear, and God's Love We Deliver, and cooking, which he does a lot of, and a bunch of other things. Kate is a huge fan of Kyle, as am I, and joined the conversation. I'm really happy to welcome him to the show. Here we go.
I've been meaning to ask you this question for 30 years.
Yes.
We watched Blue Velvet last night.
Ah, you mentioned you were going to do that.
What is Dennis
what the
heck Hopper
going on?
What is Dennis Hopper huffing?
Well, you know, he was. It was intended to be some kind of helium initially.
His voice did get a little weird.
Yeah, he was supposed to. The idea was that when he breathed into that, it would change his voice to sound more like a child, which is disturbing to think about.
Yes.
Dennis Hopper,
well,
a child.
He did call what's her name, Mommy or whatever. So yeah.
Yeah. So suddenly, like, oh yeah. But I think when they found, when they actually did that, it sounded too, it was just too funny. So Dennis suggested, and I think in his mind, I don't know exactly, I think it was some kind of nitrous, some kind of, you know, enhancement of some kind that was meant to be changing his personality in some scary way. But, you know, when it came down to it, it was basically just a prop that didn't have any, you know, there was nothing going through it. So that was all Dennis just creating with that breathing and those eyes over the mask, that kind of frightening, very frightening personality change.
It is about the creepiest movie imaginable.
It's very scary.
I loved it so much.
Very scary and very, some awkward moments and some sweet moments and some truly frightening, horrific moments. It was an experience to shoot it. You know, we actually all kind of had a fun, believe it or not, we had a good time together on it, just working in Wilmington. And we shot a lot of nights. So there was a lot of coffee consumed. And I had the only cappuccino machine. Now that they're, you know, on every set, in every craft service, they have a whole coffee machine, you know, anything you want, really. But at the time, I had like this old machine that I'd ordered. Well, it wasn't old at the time, it's old now. I still actually have the grinder that still works. But I had this Gaggia machine, and I was making cappuccinos for everybody. So they'd come to my trailer, play cards. So Dean Stockwell, Brad Dourif, Dennis Hopper, Jack Nance, me, in my trailer, and I'd be making coffees for everybody.
Where was it shot?
It was all in Wilmington, North Carolina. And as I said, a lot of nights, which really starts to mess with your head, you know, after you get into week four, week five of that switch. I found that I was making the transition fine, and then I started to go backwards. So then I started to not be able to stay up at night, and I would stay, so I'd be up all night and up all day. And it was just weird. Maybe that contributed to some of the strangeness of the performance.
I mean, amazing how well you remember it, because it really was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. I remember certain things, you know, come back. It was my second film, and my second film with David as well. And much more in his, I think he was much happier, let's just say that, shooting Blue Velvet. It was a script that he wrote, and he gave to me to read while filming Dune in Mexico City. So I had to look at it early, and I liked the script very much. Very, you know, it's disturbing, but it seemed to like go, oh yeah, this is a very frightening journey for this young character to go through.
It was really what put him on the map too, I think, at least in my mind, Lynch.
He had a kind of a midnight presence with Eraserhead,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And within the art community. And then The Grandmother was before that. The Alphabet was the first, then The Grandmother. And these were student films. And then Eraserhead. And then Elephant Man kind of set him into being considered for lots of things, including, I believe, Empire Strikes Back, the second installment. For a moment, I think he was on that list.
He said
no. I think
no.
If the rumors are true. And then he decided, and then Dune happened. And then that was a crazy experience, and in Blue Velvet kind of brought him back, I think, to his where I think he felt most comfortable.
Anyway, this is a food podcast. Not that you would know that.
I'm Stephen Covello is one of my good friends, and he so he invites me to all the God's Love stuff. And I saw your name on the Culinary Council, and I said, oh my God, do you know Kyle MacLachlan? He was like, oh yeah, Kyle's the best. I felt casual, and I was like, okay. We're going to talk to him about food.
Good.
But I do have a question for you, because I, you know, all of my friends are fans of yours, all of them, all of my friends from all walks of life. And you're like this universal guy. And I think, you know, you've done all of these really iconic roles that I think you've made iconic. it's not that the roles themselves are necessarily iconic, which you can't say about a lot of people, I don't think.
Thank you.
And so I said to a bunch of my friends, does anyone have a question that you want to hear answer? And they're all like, oh my God, I just love him so much. Everybody. And I'm like, that's not helpful at all. Like, what kind of stuff do you want to hear him talk about? And everyone was just completely bewildered. So if I know this, then you must know that it exists. And how do you manage to sort of just live your life as a normal person?
Thank you. Well, first, I think I've had great good fortune in the projects that I've been involved with. And most of them, they sought me out. I think primarily because of my relationship with Lynch and those performances and those movies have had impact on, you know, a whole legion of filmmakers and producers who really were affected by David's work and, you know, then by association, me as his kind of the alter ego. I don't think that's necessarily it, but maybe muse, I guess, or maybe I'm more of like his presence in these projects as kind of his eyes and ears, and, you know, he followed me through. That certainly was true of Blue Velvet, certainly true of Twin Peaks. So I've had that good fortune, and then, you know, worked on Desperate Housewives and Sex and the City, which are iconic shows as well. And I joined those as they were already in progress. So I've just, you know, guilt by association, I guess. You know, I started as an actor. I trained when I was younger at the university in an acting program to create repertory theater actors. That's what I was trained to do. And it's a job. It's a great job, but it's a job. And then you just kind of, and then I have my life, you know? And so I do the job, I enjoy it, I have fun. And then I come back home to my life and I love my life. You know, I love my family and my world. And so I think both can exist in a healthy way. And I think it hasn't really been an intended journey, but it's just the way it kind of has worked out. So I don't know. It just kind of seems normal to me, I guess.
Yeah, I hear you. it's just funny being on the other side of it. And
yeah.
People just freak out.
I freak out. I mean, I got cast in this cool thing called Fallout, based upon the video game that we're starting to shoot in New York. Actually, we're shooting at Steinar Studios there. And I knew nothing about the video game, but it's based on something that's quite popular, I guess. And so they reached out to me through a series of channels. And now I'm doing this thing that I'm kind of excited about because it's a completely new world. Same creators as Westworld. And so Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy. And it's very cool. And I get to go into I get to be a part of this journey now. You know, so it's just a series of, there's like a series of vacations that you take into these unusual scenarios, unusual worlds, you know, and it's fun to be able to do that. I'm very lucky.
Do you get asked a lot of weird questions?
Not a lot. Most of them make sense to you. I think I've heard most everything. I'm surprised sometimes when I hear a new one, you know, someone has a different take on something. Or, you know, what's interesting is if someone comes up to me and says, I'm really a fan of, and I'm like, and I make a judgment immediately based upon who I'm seeing. I say, oh, it may be Sex and the City, might be Blue Velvet, could be Twin Peaks, you know. And they say something like, I really loved you in The Trial. And I'm like, wow. You're one of eight people that saw that. And I'm so glad. Thank you. And because I was kind of proud of it too, but no one saw it. So those are always kind of those are unexpected moments, I guess.
Was The Trial Franz Kafka or John Grisham?
Yeah. Yeah, we filmed in Prague in 92, directed by David Jones, and it was Harold Pinter wrote the script, so a really nice pedigree. And I played the main character, and it was Joseph K. And worked with Anthony Hopkins, worked with a wonderful cast, and you know it was one of those ones that's like, well. this would be great for the Criterion Collection.
We'll watch.
Really great movie. No one's going to see it.
So when you're home, do you cook? Because we really have to talk about food a little bit. Excellent.
Yeah, of course.
How lucky are we?
Awesome answer. Thank you.
Yes, I do cook. If I didn't cook, we would all starve here. My wife Desiree is not at home in the kitchen, but she's very happy that I am at home in the kitchen. And my son has a few skills. He's 13. He's off at camp now, but he likes to. He's more of a in the baking world, and he'll just. You know, cookies he loves, you know, muffins he loves, Rice Krispie treats he loves. So he's pretty capable in the kitchen, you know, and he manages okay. We worked together the other day we did a steak, seared steak on a cast iron with the butter and the laying on with the herbs and all that kind of thing after we did like a sear and a sear and then kind of were basting it. And, he enjoyed that too. So it's things like that. It's nothing terribly involved, but simple things that I know that they like, my family likes, in particular my son. Vegetables was always a challenge. And I, unlike my parents, feel like if we find a vegetable that works, we're just going to stick with it. There's no suddenly we're going to like throw some lima beans at him, you know, or some kind of weird sauteed carrot thing. It's like, he likes broccoli. Broccoli works. Great vegetable.
Eat it every night.
You boil it for a minute and a half or however long. So it's not soft. Just got the nice crunch and pull it off, salt it. That's all you do.
That's so funny.
He likes that. I do a cauliflower thing, which is nice too, which is a roasted cauliflower with a lot of, cumin, and I dress it up with breadcrumbs and a little Parmesan, olive oil, of course, and we roast that till it gets pretty crunchy, and he likes that too. I don't think there's any nutrients left in it, but it's tasty. You know.
He'll eat cumin?
Cumin, yeah. He loves a lot of cumin, wow. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was going to say, cumin, Parmesan, olive oil, breadcrumbs is an unusual combination.
It's weird. I know, it's weird.
Did you make it up?
You do, you know, you take the cauliflower, you know, you get it all so even kind of sized pieces and then olive oil the heck out of it, salt, and then, you know, a couple of tablespoons of cumin on there and just mix it all together, lay in a little breadcrumbs, a little bit of Parmesan, and then you do a little bit of Parmesan like halfway through the cooking as well. It roasts up really nice. It gets kind of crunchy and good flavors. I think the cooking takes the cumin and kind of soft, you know, takes it out a little bit. But the panko, I use the panko actually, is nice because it gives a little bit of a crunch to it.
What did you cook for dinner last night?
Last night was kind of a throw together meal. So we had sort of like a turkey meatball, which is sort of turkey, you know, doctored up with a few things, and then pan seared, and then in the oven. And then I just sort of put a salad together that we had. So I had arugula, and I had a little bit of fennel that was almost on its last legs, but I managed to find a little part of the bulb that worked, so I shaved that off, and then I took a little radicchio that was also getting close to the end and peeled off the outer leaves, and I sort of sliced that chiffonade pretty fine and mixed those three things together, which is a nice combination. And then I took the other part of the arugula and I roasted it. I like to grill it. So a little olive oil and just grilled and then salt and a little bit of balsamic and you're done. My wife loves it. So we have that sale. Then we have some fresh tomatoes, which are nice. So our neighbor gave us some big heirloom tomatoes. So I kind of cut those into pieces with some thinly sliced sweet onion and basil. Again, kind of chiffonade basil mixed together, salt. Kind of just simple tomato salad and a little bit of bread. Trying to do not too much bread, but you got to have a little bread with a tomato salad. And that was it. So not too fancy, but, you know, pretty healthy.
Are you in California?
I am in California. Yeah. We're back in LA. This is, so we have a place in LA and a place in New York, and we have a nice kitchen in New York, actually, for New York, a very nice kitchen. But my kitchen in LA is really, it's a great one. It's got all the stuff you need.
You want to talk about wine?
Yeah, talk about what?
My favorite subject. And we had wine last night. Well, I had wine last night. My wife was like, she said, I think I'm going to pass. And I said, okay. So we had some of my Bear Cub last night, which is the Cab Merlot Syrah blend that I just started a few years ago. It's a recent addition. And it's very, it's one of those very easy to just to kind of pull it off the shelf, open it up, and it's very satisfying. No fuss, no muss.
Your wine's made in Walla Walla, right?
Yes, my I don't actually own a winery, so I custom crush at a winery called Abeja, which is also a wonderful smaller production winery. And my winemaker makes the wine, happens to make the wine for Abeja, and so he also makes my wine. He's been making my wine since about 2008. Dan Wamfler is his name, and so we've got a shorthand. I source from vineyards around the Columbia Valley, but from specific AVAs within that, smaller AVAs within that, with growers that I've had, you know, relationships with for years. I've got my own rows. I know what to expect. You know, the only thing that changes, of course, is just volume. You, depending upon the year, how much you get off the vines, which changes, of course, the production. But yeah, we've got it pretty much dialed in now.
But those are the grapes you were just talking about are like Southern Rhone grapes, and you're growing them in the Northwest. Is this a climate change thing? You wouldn't expect Syrah to be coming out of, or I wouldn't. I'm not that up in the wine world, but.
Yeah, from Washington State. Well, there's really two Washingtons, you know. Someone had the bright idea to nickname it the Evergreen State. I'm like, well, that works if you live in Seattle. But if you live on the eastern side of the state, we should call it the Sagebrush State, because it's basically, it's just a dry, high plateau desert, you know, with rivers that run through that are beautiful. But, you know, there's not much rain over there. You have a rain shadow effect from two mountain ranges before you get to the east side. You got the Olympic Peninsula, the national park there, which is pretty significant. And then you have kind of the Seattle Basin and that area of the Puget Sound. And then you have a second range of mountains called the Cascades, which are about 60 miles to the east of Seattle. And that stops really most of the moisture, those two ranges. So by the time you get over kind of into what we call the east side, eastern Washington, you know, there's not much rain. And there's a lot of heat. And so you can pretty much grow anything over there. And it just happens to be really great for vinifera. The wine grapes do very well there. And Walla Walla has become the mecca of, you know, it's kind of the center, the hub of the winemaking industry in Washington State. And so I got involved in 2005, I guess, with my first vintage, just for fun. I was like, oh, let's make some wine. How do you do it? Who do I got to talk to? Okay. I had no idea. I didn't even know what I was going to make. I had to talk to the winemaker at the time, a gentleman named Eric Dunham. And I say, what are we going to, you know, what should we do here? What's the best call? And he said, what do you like to drink? And I said, well, I really like Cabernet. He said, well, let's make Cabernet. I said, that sounds good to me. Let's make Cabernet. So that's really, it was about that simple.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that, available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the Multi-Terrain Select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
You had a couple questions about wine.
I was interested to hear about how climate does affect the winemaking process.
Yeah, it's definitely a factor. Now, Eastern Washington is hot, you know, and so we've been dealing with heat for years. The impact of climate change is being felt, I feel like, in different intensities based upon where you are in the world. As you were saying, we were talking earlier about England. I mean, right now, it's just crazy how hot it is there. But in Eastern Washington, it's like, no, that's kind of how we roll, you know. It's over 100, you know, for weeks at a time. So the growers have got knowledge about how to deal with that. So there's a lot of canopy management. They everything is irrigated there, and it has to be irrigated. So they just kind of keep an eye on it. And it just depends kind of on your, you know, the intensity and how long the heat lasts as to when the harvest is going to be. Sometimes harvest starts as early as like mid to late August. This year it's actually 2 weeks late, so it'll be more mid-September, early October. The great thing about Washington, which people talk about, is this diurnal shift. So hot days, and then at night, because it is at altitude a little bit and it is a desert, it cools off. And so the grapes get a chance to relax a little bit and develop those bright acid flavors that are so important. And then, you know, it comes back in the morning and the heat starts up again. And it's one of the great things, because you can balance the higher alcohol and the intensity of the fruit with this great structure that comes with these temperature shifts. The heat is one thing, but I think the fire situation, particularly, you know, up in here in California, those fires and the impact smoke has on the vineyards is almost more concerning. You know, the heat you can kind of deal with, you know, if you do good canopy management, depending upon where your vines are. If you're on a slope, you get a little, you know, you get a little breeze, you know, can cool things off. But boy, if you get a fire and anywhere and that smoke comes in and stays around, you're going to have taint, and that's just a problem.
That is what Californians all say. Well, I mean, also the smoke is, we all remember when our friends in California were walking around with masks before COVID. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about God's love, because I love it. And you are on the Culinary Council and Desiree is on the board, right? How did you get involved? I guess I should give some background. God's Love is this incredible meal service delivery in New York, and it started in the AIDS crisis, I believe. They started delivering meals to people who were affected by AIDS, and now it's just, it's a force, and they do the most amazing work. How did you get involved?
Desiree and I came to it. Desiree actually came to it first through a friend, Blaine Trump, who's been involved with it for a long time. She was for a time married to Donald's brother, Robert. And she was involved along with Joan Rivers, the late Joan Rivers. And Desiree knew Blaine, and then I got to know Blaine. And she would talk about this organization, and I said, well, what is this organization? You know, what's going on here? And I said, oh, and they feed people. And as you described, they provide meals free of charge to people that are not able to, you know, afford or get out of their, you know, they're people that are home. They're either suffering from some injury, disease, in treatment of some kind. And they have these meals that they provide, these nutritious meals that they deliver. And God's Love, we deliver. And I just think, you know, the organization is so, it's just a very kind of basic in a way, in a good way. You know, it's like you have a need, you have people that are hungry, you have people that volunteer, and the custody, you don't have to pay anything. It's all donations. And they make these great meals. They have a good time doing it. And the people that volunteer feel great about it. You're making good food. Food goes out to people, and they have this kind of it's a kind of a camaraderie amongst the people that are involved that is really infectious and really, really fun. And they've made this incredible thing. And I said, this is a great. I can get behind this because if I give my money, I know it's going to go and feed somebody, you know. Or if I volunteer, or if I shine a light on it with my social or whatever it is. It's going to a good cause, a cause that I can see. I know it's going to happen.
The people that work there are so wonderful. The energy is so good. I've volunteered there before I even knew Steven, and I made some meals, and it's the kitchen is like all buzzing, and everybody just loves what they do. It's really a terrific, it's a terrific organization.
It is. And they're so appreciative of anything that you can get. You know, it's like, depending if you give a little, you give a lot, it doesn't matter. They're like, thank you so very much. We're so grateful. And that you really feel like it makes a difference. I've done a couple of things there, donated some of my wine, which I'm going to be doing for the dinner coming up. And then I get to be the sous chef experience once. And just a few things, you know, you're just like, sure, I'll, you know, want to help out and be involved. So I just, I love the organization.
I've done some stuff with them over the years too. I think we did a demo serve right before COVID. Remember with Mike Anthony? Mm-hmm. But I had a friend of, close friend of mine died from AIDS complications in 86. And he was living in like a group home for the last few months of his life. And we were bringing him food because he couldn't go out. And this didn't exist. And so when they started God's Love, We Deliver, I was into it immediately because it was such an obvious need. And then the ironic thing is that in the last year of my mother's life, she was getting meals from God's Love, We Deliver. Although she complained, but she complained about everything. They're really not very good. Remember,
she was like, she said, I want to switch back to Meals on Wheels. I don't like this.
I don't like it. But she didn't eat. She actually didn't eat hardly anything the last year she was alive. You know, she'd eat like a tomato or a quarter of a head of lettuce or something. And she'd drink a glass of milk and she'd call that dinner. But she never had a great palate, to tell you the truth. So when she would criticize some food, you just would be like, whatever, Ma. You know?
That's hilarious. Well, you got the palate. Isn't that funny how the way it usually starts, you know, your parents are one way and you kind of go, the opposite way.
Well, I mean, to her credit, and I used to say things sort of semi-publicly and say, well, my mother's alive. I can't really tell the truth about this because she might hear this. But I would be sort of critical of her. And then long before she died, within enough time for me to tell her, I realized that she gave me the gift of believing that you had to put dinner on the table every night. That was like the critical thing. And the thing about my mother was that she didn't like cooking. She didn't particularly like eating. She did it out of obligation, and she probably resented it, although she never would have said that. But she did it. And that's what I learned, is that someone puts dinner on the table every night. Yeah. And, you know, I wouldn't even say that that's a rule in today's society. You can't imagine how people who work have that in a family with only one parent or with two parents both working. You can't imagine how anyone would have the energy to put dinner on the table. I was lucky enough to make a career out of putting dinner on the table, so it was a little different. Yeah. But I do owe a lot of that thinking to her. So,
yeah. My dad, I got a lot from my father, who was a good cook, and he honestly he enjoyed it. I think. I mean, his you know, I think his great one of his great pleasures, I think, was he was a stockbroker, so he would work. And the market would finish about 2. He'd go to the golf course, and because he'd been a golfer since he was a kid, very good golfer, in fact. And he'd play, and then on the way home, he'd swing into the grocery store. He should have lived in Europe actually, because he would shop every day, and he'd buy stuff, bring it in, and he would get going in dinner. He'd pour himself a really healthy gin and tonic, and then he would start cooking. And I remember we would watch episodes of The Galloping Gourmet back in. I mean, I don't know, 70s, I'm guessing, somewhere in there, mid-70s, early 70s, one of the early cooking shows, you know, because I think he like he had such a, he was very witty, and of course he got progressively drunk as the episode went on, you know, and my dad was like, oh, this is perfect. And but he put dinner on the table for us. And when he was with my mom and we lived, they would work together in the kitchen, which was nice. And he was always, you know, he'd be outside grilling every single, even in the dead of winter in Yakima, where I grew up, which could be, you know, snowy and cold. He'd be out there, you know, probably with a beer or a gin and tonic, of course. That was part of the ritual.
How did you get your son into it?
You know, he just kind of was curious. And, you know, with kids, I'm not as good as I should have been. But, you know, if you sort of say, come and you know, let's make some eggs, crack some eggs in here. You know what I mean? And that's like, okay, that's a cool activity, you know? Okay, now we're going to, let's put these in the mixer, you know, and then we'll add, you know, some flour here. We'll do this kind of, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he just, you know, kind of really looking for activities in some ways, you know what I mean? Just to keep him off his, at the time to keep him off his iPad, keep him off of video games, at least for a few minutes, you know what I mean? And then at the end of the day, you get to eat whatever you, what do you want? So, which is why I think baking appealed, which is why, you know, the whole idea of sort of the cookies thing. It's the kind of immediate gratification, I think.
A lot of people begin cooking with baking because they want dessert. So like, oh, I should learn how to make brownies because then I can eat brownies.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I'm like, that's exactly not the thing that I need to eat.
Right. You actors, you must be on like crazy, you have like crazy food situations.
Well, you know, everyone's different, but you can, ultimately I think my vanity takes over and I'm like, well, I have to look at least somewhat decent for this show, you know? And then if there's any kind of scenes where any skin's exposed, it makes it doubly frightening.
You were very handsome as Jeffrey, I will say.
Yeah, Jeffrey's.
Jeffrey is very handsome.
Well, when you're 23, you don't really, you're 25, you're pretty impervious to anything, you know. Cut to 20 years later, and you're like, hello, why is all this still hanging around my middle?
What about Trey? Trey in the kilt? Come on.
Trey in the kilt, yeah, that was okay.
So great.
I just said, please don't shoot my calves because they're non-existent. But the kilt was okay.
That's your insecurity? Calves? I love it.
I would not have been very popular. And when the calf muscle was like the sexiest thing on a man or something like in the 1700s or something crazy like that, that would have been very a challenging time for me.
Could I just ask you one like totally irrelevant industry question, which is, yeah. It's not gossip. It's
Oh boy, what is this gonna be?
It's not. Is there lots of work for veteran actors because there's so much stuff being, well, first, you know, everybody, COVID gave everybody an excuse to watch TV nonstop. Everybody wants to watch series. Everybody's binge watching. No one misses anything they want to see. And it just seems like there's new stuff being pumped out at unprecedented rate. And the thing you're working on sounds great, but it's hardly sort of traditional Kyle MacLachlan kind of work. Is it right. Just like there's so much stuff available now that there's just always work all the time?
It feels like that. I mean, it feels like there are numerous opportunities for actors, and you know, you have so many methods of delivery and companies that, you know, I mean, you've got Hulu and Netflix and Amazon and, you know, on and on and on and on. And it's just, it's crazy. You know, it's still challenging, I think, to find, you know, quality material is not in abundance, but it's there. What I find interesting is that there's a much greater range for ideas and interpretations and visions, really, the vision of the director, producer to, hey, I want to tell this story about this particular slice of the world, and it's part sci-fi and part fantasy in this, and then it's real as well. And oh, there's going to be some animation in it, and then we're going to do this, and this little furry animals are going to, you know, like, what is coming up with? But people are like, yeah, that sounds great. Go make that. And then you'll find an audience, right. You know, and it's like, okay, and who knows? I mean, no one really knows. Is it going to, maybe it becomes this viral hit, you know? But people are able to pursue their vision. And I think, I like to think that way back when we did Twin Peaks, which was for network television, for ABC.
That's right.
89, 90. It was a little bit of a kind of a rift in the fabric of creativity. And suddenly, because it was David Lynch bringing his vision to television, David Lynch and Mark Frost, both co-creators, I think it had an impact on, you know, a generation of filmmakers that were like, whoa, hey, look what we can do on television. And it just started this churning out of ideas and excitement and creativity. And we weren't, you know, we weren't the only ones at that time, but we were certainly in the beginning. And it's led to just so much potential. And television and streamers are no longer looked at as, oh, that's where you're relegated to that after you sort of finish your career in movies, then you go to TV, you know, and you kind of, it's like if they put you out to pasture, you know, which is kind of what it used to be. Now it's vibrant and alive and kind of leading the way, you know, apart from the tentpole movies that we see, which are fun, but there's so much more interesting stuff going on television, I think.
That's a really good point about Twin Peaks, though, because I do remember it was an event. I mean, it was a really big deal. And
yeah,
and it was television. And the fact that this movie guy was doing really great television, and you couldn't, it was also David Lynch, so it was so freaking weird.
True.
I'm going to ask you this because you did bring up Dune. And, you know, one of my dear friends made me watch Dune. This was years ago. And I thought, I had to turn it off halfway through. And I was like, this is way too weird. I don't get it. I feel like I'm not smart enough, and that's frustrating. And then, you know, now, of course, I love it. But then I read this interview that you did, I think, with The Guardian, and you said, half the time, I feel like I don't really know what David's thinking, and it's just sort of him following his subconscious. And I thought, wow, like, if he's okay with that, if Kyle's okay with just sort of going along with it, shouldn't the rest of us just sort of go along with it and stop trying to overthink everything so much?
That's funny. I mean, I think so much of David's brilliance is really that he doesn't, he follows his, you know, his intuition, his creativity. And if it doesn't necessarily, it makes sense to him in a way. And I've never really spoken to him in depth about it. I don't think he would want me to. In fact, he just, you know, he's like, that's his private domain. But I feel like you really, if you're going to invest in a experience, you just have to sort of let yourself go or let your, you know, mind go a little bit and just have the experience, because he's very specific about everything he does, from, you know, framing. Obviously, he started as a painter, so the frame is very important. The movement within the frame, the music and the sound, of course, is incredibly important. And almost about how you feel. So you have to turn off, well, that doesn't make sense right there. But you're like, oh, it does. It's somehow making sense. I can't tell you how or why. Or maybe it's not making sense, but maybe it's going to make sense later. You know, it's this whole journey that you have to just, you sort of have to take your hands off the wheel and just go with it, I found. And less so, you know, Dune was a structure, you know, it was a book. Now, if you come to that movie without having any prior knowledge, it's, you know, it's incomprehensible. You just don't know what's going on.
You thank you might for enjoy, saying that.
No, you might enjoy the, you certainly enjoy the journey and the visuals, but it's like, I'm going to come away with this and I have no idea what just happened. I was a huge fan of the book since I was 15. I read the book like maybe twice a year. I mean, it was really a very important piece of literature when I was in junior high and high school, helped get me through a lot of stuff. So that at the end of the day, it turned out I was playing Paul. I was like, this is just almost unreal. But I know that I was not the only person that had that affection for the book. I mean, there's many, many, many people. I just happened to be fortunate enough to be the guy that played Paul the first time out. And I love our movie. You know, I love all the inconsistencies. I love the visuals. I love the sort of the awkward moments. The fact that it sort of rushes to conclusion because we ran out of time. Everything about it, I just like, oh, this is great. I also enjoyed the new one. I enjoyed the new one that director Denis Villeneuve did and Timothy's performed. I enjoyed that too, you know, because I love the story and I love the characters. But I have a particular fondness for ours.
It was hard for me to watch a different Paul, but
he had pretty good hair, though, I got to say. I mean, at the end of the day.
Okay, we have here what may be the world's first original Kyle MacLachlan recipe. It is called Render the Head of Cauliflower Garcia, and it is briefly described by Kyle in the course of our interview. One head of cauliflower, a couple of tablespoons of olive oil, 1.5 tablespoons of cumin, more or less to taste, a teaspoon of spoked paprika, we call that pimenton, but a teaspoon of that, myself, I would use more. So could we say, or more or less to taste on that? A teaspoon of salt, or to taste, of course, 2 tablespoons of panko breadcrumbs, 2 tablespoons of finely grated Parmesan, and a splash of white vinegar. Preheat the oven and a baking sheet at 375. Render the head of cauliflower into bite-sized pieces, not too small. In a bowl, coat the cauliflower with the olive oil. Add the cumin, smoked paprika, salt, panko, and Parmesan. Mix with your hands to coat the cruciferous cauliflower. And then splash with the vinegar. Then fling those bad boys onto the preheated baking sheet. Roast again at 375 for about 45 minutes, stirring occasionally. Add more Parmesan the last 5 minutes of cooking, and don't stack the cauliflower. You want the pieces to roast. If they're too close, they'll steam and come out soft. There it is, folks. It's a recipe the likes of which I have made many times, but not with cumin, pimenton, and Parmesan. That's an unusual combination, so worth trying, I think. Well, that was fun. It's always great to meet a celeb, a genuine celeb, who actually cooks and provided us with a recipe. I mean, how often does that happen? Not that often. So thank you to the lovely Kyle MacLachlan. I feel like, once again, I've made a friend, and we're going to see each other as I'm recording just before our release. We're going to see each other later today on a God's Love We Deliver Culinary Council. You can follow Kyle on Instagram and at Twitter at Kyle McLaughlin. That's K-Y-L-E underscore M-A-C-L-A-C-H-L-A-N. Thanks also to Kate Bittman, our producer, and of course today's co-host, to Davis Lloyd, our engineer. And our theme music is courtesy of my friend Moby Hall. Thanks for listening. Please do subscribe and leave comments and ratings for us. And reach out to us at food@markbittman.com. See you next week when we will have somebody amazing. Bye for now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.